in Hebrews chapter 12, beginning with verse 12. Because here's a responsibility that all of us have for everybody in the group. Hebrews 12, beginning with verse 12. The inspired writer says this: "Therefore, strengthen the hands that are weak and the knees that are feeble, and make straight paths for your feet, so that the limb which is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed." And then down in verse 15, he says, "See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God." See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God. The Hebrew writer is pointing out the reality of this relationship that we sustain with other Christians. We are in a relationship with people who sometimes are weak, sometimes are spiritually weak. He uses these various figures to talk about spiritual weakness, though they are figures drawn from the idea of physical frailty. In verse 12, he talks about strengthening the hands of those who are weak and the knees that are feeble. My father is in a time of his life where he talks to me a lot about this particular frailness on his part, his feebleness. And when he tries to get up out of a chair, and he and I laugh about this. He laughs at it too. We kind of joke about this, because if you don't joke about it, it's just so serious. And just him getting up out of the chair, and his legs are really feeble, his knees are feeble. Three times over a three-week period of time, I just happened to be there and caught him when he fell and prevented him from, I know, having serious injury. And so that's the kind of imagery that the Hebrew writer is using here. But he's talking about people who spiritually have frail hands and knees that are weak, and they are prone to stumble. They are prone to fall. And he talks in verse 15 about how important it is for us to do everything we can to see to it that no one comes short of the grace of God. Think about that statement. There's the grace of God. It is there. It is available for people. And yet some people come real close to it, but just don't quite get it. And he's talking about brethren. He's talking about fellow Christians. This whole letter is a letter that is trying to exhort those who are Christians to not fall back into the things of the world, and specifically that former kind of Judaism that they knew. But the point is to not fall back, to drift back into those things that are not in accordance with God's will. And there are so many Christians who are so prone toward that. And here the Hebrew writer says, everybody else has that responsibility to look out to that person who maybe is spiritually weak, who might be coming just short of that grace of God, because there are things in their life they need to correct. They need somebody that can help them to get their life back on track. And so this is this relationship that we sustain. As we said this morning, the most visible manifestation of this relationship we sustain with other Christians is in that local church arena. But the point is, we need to see our responsibility to help other people who might spiritually be prone to go back into the world. Now, having said that, I do want to acknowledge something. I believe that the Bible teaches very clearly that Christians falling away and going back into the world, that's not a shocking thing. It's sad, but it's not shocking. In fact, in Jesus' parable in Matthew chapter 13, the parable of the sower and the soils, where he talks there about the word of God likened unto seed that a sower would scatter, and it fell on different types of soil. And you will recall that in Matthew chapter 13, when Jesus is explaining this parable, he points out that those different soils, they symbolize the different kinds of human hearts. In some of these human hearts, he's describing the scenario is that of those who actually obey the gospel of Jesus Christ and become part of God's family, but just not for long. Matthew chapter 13, verse 20. And the one on whom seed was sown on the rocky places, this is the man who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy, yet he has no firm root in himself, but is only temporary. And when afflictions or persecution arise because of the word, immediately he falls away. Or verse 22, and the one on whom seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. Of those four soils that depict human hearts and how they respond to the gospel, two out of the four are talking about those who hear the word, who obey it, and yet they don't last. They fall away. Or to use the verbiage of Hebrews 12, I think we can say that they came short of the grace of God. Real close, but they came short of it. So I realize, based upon Jesus' teaching here, that the idea that some of our number might fall away, that's not surprising. In fact, I think you can even put it a little more strongly. Some of our number, even in this local congregation, I think it's inevitable for us to see that some will fall away. It's not that we want that to occur. In fact, our attitude should be that of seeing to it that no one come short. We ought to have the attitude of that shepherd that Jesus talked about in his parable of the sheep who would leave the 99 to go search out for that one who was lost. So yes, that needs to be our attitude. And yet, it certainly is true that when we see people who become Christians, maybe are part of our number, and then they fall away, that is not something that should shock us. But on the other hand, should our attitude just be, well, it's inevitable. Okay, somebody else has fallen away. Couldn't help it. Couldn't prevent it. Nothing we could have done to help. Jesus said sometimes that's the hearts, that's the soil that different people represent. And so some, they receive the word for a short time and then fall away. Okay, so that's happened with us. Should our attitude just be one of resignation to that? I don't think so. Sure, it's going to happen. But our attitude needs to be a diligent desire to do everything we can to prevent it from happening to even one person. And if and when it does happen, no, don't be shocked and just destroyed ourselves by that, but nevertheless, do everything we can do to try to prevent it. I want to talk with you tonight about some things maybe that we need to think about along that line. Are there some losses among us, among our number, that could be prevented? Are there some individuals maybe who, even among our local congregation, became part of us? Maybe they were baptized into Jesus Christ as a young, new Christian, and they were with us for a short time and then went back to the world. Are there some of those that we could have prevented from being drawn back into the world? Are there some people in the future who maybe could be prevented from being pulled back into the world? There's some things that we need to think about to be more engaged in so we can prevent some of those losses from occurring. I think we need to have that kind of diligent attitude. Talking first of all about members who fall away, at least in large part because they never did become really part of the group. We talked this morning a little bit about that tendency. Sometimes we have people who are just kind of members. They become members again. Maybe it's that they were newly converted to Jesus Christ, and so they're now a new member among us in this local congregation. Or maybe sometimes it's people who have been Christians for some period of time, but they move into our area, and so they are new to us. But somehow they just never really integrate into our group. They just don't become part of us. They're sort of that nominal member in name only. Their name is on the roster. They have their picture on the board because Nick took their photograph, and so it's there. But they don't ever really just get involved. Well, let me just ask you this question. Those members who are really actively involved in the group and those members who are just sort of on the periphery of the group, which are more likely to be drawn back into the world? Isn't it those who just never really became part of us? Is there something that we could do to help with that? We try to talk about this a lot when we talk about visitors, first-time visitors maybe that come in. We all recognize that, you know, first-time visitors come in, they feel a little bit odd and ill at ease because they're new here. They don't know us. Well, to a certain extent, maybe a lesser extent, but to some extent, even those who are new members among us, they don't know everybody as well. The fact that they are newer members, they don't feel as comfortable. There's a lot of names they have to learn. Maybe the rest of us just have that one person's name to learn who's new among us. Or maybe it's the family there. But for that individual, there's a whole lot of people that they have to learn the names of. See how it's easy for that kind of person to maybe just kind of, especially if their personality is one of shyness or maybe other things that have happened in their past, they just kind of lurk in the background, they're on the periphery, then maybe the next service they don't show up. And because they were so much on the periphery, they were on the outskirts, the members of the group who really are involved in the work, we didn't maybe notice that they were there because they are new and they haven't really yet integrated among us. And so we didn't notice that they were gone that service. Maybe the next service we didn't notice they were gone. And then it's maybe two services later that then in conversation or somebody mentions their name and we kind of think, I haven't seen that person. And yet there's maybe been several services where they weren't missed. And the reason is not because of a lack of concern or no care about them. It's just the fact that they haven't yet really become part of us. In Acts chapter 6, you have the problem of the Grecian widows who were being overlooked in the daily serving of food and the apostles addressing that problem. And there's a lot of things you could say about that chapter, but may I just suggest this point to you? That the problem there wasn't just a problem of, here were some people who were hungry and they needed some food and they accidentally got overlooked. I mean, that's the problem on one level. But isn't the reason why the apostles are so concerned about that and why even the membership is so concerned about that when they see that this is occurring, isn't at least one part of the reason why that's such a serious problem is, what if it continues that those Grecian widows get overlooked in the daily serving of those benevolence meals? It's not just going to be a problem that those women are going to go hungry. What else might happen? You think maybe those women might tend to drift away and be lost spiritually? Because of the fact that they weren't Palestinian Jews, because of the fact that they were widows and so were by themselves, it was easy for them to get lost in the crowd and overlooked in the crowd. And that's what made them so vulnerable spiritually. Not just physical needs, but even their spiritual needs, they were so much more vulnerable because of that. Because they were a little bit from the outside, because they were maybe by themselves. Doesn't that describe maybe a lot of people who come in among us, whether they are new converts to Jesus Christ or whether they maybe are members who have moved into this area? Isn't it easy for them, because they're a little bit on the outside and just sort of nominal members at first, it's easy for them to get lost in the crowd? That's especially going to be true if you've got maybe somebody, it isn't a family unit that joins our number, but maybe it's just an individual. Real easy for that individual, like that Grecian widow, to kind of be overlooked. Not intentionally, but it's just kind of the thing that happens. And that's going to be the person more prone to maybe get disheartened. And then when the cares of the world and some of the vicissitudes of life begin to just tug at them, that's going to be the person that's more likely for us to lose. What can we do about that to maybe prevent that from happening? Might not be able to prevent all of that from happening and losing all those in that category, but maybe we could prevent some. And so what can we do? I'd just suggest some things to us this evening. I'd suggest that we make it a special point to take note of those people who are newer members among us. In fact, I would suggest this. Go out to that bulletin board and start looking at all those faces. And you take special note of those faces that you don't really know very well. Those people who's, yeah, I always forget her name. What is, you know, and, you know, look at that on the board. Take special note of that individual and maybe some others that you see are kind of in that category. And then look out for them at that next service. If they're not there, give them a call. You give them a... Don't wait for the elders to do this. In fact, I think sometimes what we tend to do is we say, well, you know, we have some members that are kind of falling through the cracks. I hope the elders are taking care of that. Let me just say to you, this is a big group of people. It's really tough for us. And I don't know about the other elders, but I know after each and every service, there's usually something and some issue or some problem or somebody needs to talk to me or whatever, and usually it's the other elders too. It's hard for us so often to see everybody and maybe take note of everybody. But if all of us could take to heart what Hebrews 12 is talking about, and all of us see the responsibility to see that no one comes short. Don't just say, well, the elders will take care of that. No, you focus in upon that person. And if they're not there, well, then call them. I know there are some of you who make a special point when there are newer people among us. You invite them out to dinner. You invite them into your home for dinner just for the purpose of getting to know them better and to make them feel more a part of us. God bless you for that. I mean, that kind of thing is so good and so helpful. And if more of us could be doing that, then maybe we could get some of these people to feel more a part of the group more quickly before maybe the world starts tugging. There are some particular people among us that I think maybe fall in this category that we're talking about. Members who just haven't become, at least as yet, haven't become really an integral part of our group. Everybody, make it a special point to just go through the membership directory and focus in. In fact, maybe there are certain people, make them your special project. How about that? Make them your special project. And you know what? If the person is especially in your age range, don't you think there's maybe even a little more responsibility that you would have because you're better equipped, because you're kind of just in their age and stage of life? You know, you're kind of the one more able to help that person. If it's a college age person, maybe those who are college age, okay, really focus in on those. Those who are maybe young married couples with small kids, okay, those of you who are in that stage of life, see that as your project. If it's an elderly person, well then, okay, if that's the stage of life that you're in, well then maybe especially focus in on that. And I don't mean to suggest that that only those people in that stage of life are your only responsibility. I'm just suggesting some things to us for us to think about. But maybe we can save somebody who otherwise would get tugged back into the world because we haven't yet really got them to feel part of our group and all the good kind of good peer pressure that comes from being a part of the group and all the encouragement and strength that comes in numbers. They don't feel that yet because they're still so on the periphery. So maybe let's give some thought to that. Talk with you about another individual that members among us that so often we tend to lose. And that's those members who are inadequately taught. Those members who are inadequately taught. In Acts chapter 2 and verse 42, when Luke is recounting that Pentecost day where 3,000 Jews obeyed Jesus Christ, and then with each successive day, more and more are being brought into the fold of Jesus Christ, Luke makes this statement in Acts 2 and verse 42. He says, "And they were continually devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the breaking of bread, to fellowship, and to prayer." So these are these things that those people who were now disciples of Jesus, here's what they are dedicating themselves to. The very first one mentioned is the apostles' teaching. Think about that. Here are people, thousands of people, who have been converted to Jesus Christ. They were not part of that band of disciples who traveled with Jesus for 3 years. They didn't hear Jesus teach. They weren't part of that band of disciples to hear all of that instruction. Don't you think that's what Luke is talking about when he says that now this early church, they were devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching? What were the apostles teaching? All those things that Jesus had been teaching his disciples that they had not yet been privy to, as well as additional instruction that was being given through the Holy Spirit. And that's what new converts desperately need. They need teaching. They need instruction. And yet, so often, here's what happens. Remember Hosea chapter 4 and verse 6. "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." There are some new converts, for example, we're not able to teach them adequately some fundamental aspects of Christianity, and before too much time at all, they're pulled back into the world. For example, this happened with specific people among us now. I'm not speaking hypothetically. For example, there are some people who have even been among us, and you see this constantly. They maybe are baptized into Jesus Christ. They get that. They understand now, at least the concept of, I'm repenting of my sins, I'm being baptized into Jesus Christ to now receive the forgiveness of my sins, to be a Christian. And they understand that, but what they don't really understand is the idea of what a commitment to Jesus is going to require on just a regular basis. A lot of them don't really grasp the idea of a local church and that relationship with other Christians that we've been talking about today. That's really foreign to them. A lot of people in our society, as I said this morning, they have a very individualistic kind of concept. And so it's just me and God. And the idea of being part of some organized group, they don't really understand that. And so they need to be taught those kinds of things. There's a lot of people who are converted to Jesus Christ and we have baptized, yet they don't understand the idea of denominationalism and all the error out there. In their minds, yeah, this is a good church right here, but you know what? There's another church down the road and that one, and they have different names. They may have some different practices, but they're all good churches, right? That's what a lot of those people think. They just assume that. They don't understand the idea that just because people say that they're Christians, that doesn't mean that they're all following the apostolic teaching. In fact, what we see so often are people who are not following the apostolic teaching. And yet these new converts, they don't understand all of that yet. And there's a lot of people who've been Christians for years and years and years, and they still don't understand that. And then we lose a lot of them. So what can we do about that? Well, obviously, the answer to that specific problem is, as Hosea said, they're destroyed because of lack of knowledge. And in fact, in that context, Hosea was really getting on the priests and the Levites for not teaching the people. So we need to teach them. And that's one reason why we try to, first of all, include throughout lessons from this pulpit, fundamental lessons that all of us need to be reminded of every now and then, but especially those who are younger in the faith, they really need to learn those things. But that's not even the most important thing that we need to be doing. What we also have been trying to do here is to have some special classes, and Ed Brown especially has sort of been integral in all of this, and Ed has been assisted by Nick Chapman and even some others in trying to have some special classes that are dealing with some foundational principles. And we're trying to encourage those who are newer Christians to take those classes and to learn and benefit from all of those things and address some of the very issues I was just talking about a few minutes ago. So we are trying to do that. I'll tell you what everybody could kind of help us with on that. Sometimes what happens is some of the very people who need to be in some of those classes, they don't feel comfortable going into those classes. It would, and I think maybe sometimes it's because, you know, they're thinking, well, you know, this is maybe just some new converts class or whatever, and, you know, they feel a little bit odd going in there. And some of you have been so good about this, and so appreciate that. Some of you who have been Christians for years and years, some of these classes that Ed has been teaching, Ed and Nick have been teaching, you've gone in there just for the purpose of trying to be an encouragement to others and maybe help with that class, maybe at least from your seat. You're not formally teaching it, but at least as a member of that class, able to help those. That is so good. And if we could kind of think about that, and even as you're kind of looking around at those people who are newer Christians, who maybe are kind of on the periphery a little bit, that maybe need some of this special instruction, maybe you can encourage them to go into some of those classes. And as we announce these classes, if you could maybe just go with them and be a member of those classes too. That could be a great help. But also, just understand what we're trying to do here. We're trying to take some of those people who are these young Christians and to educate them in the things of God and give them that information so they can grow in the grace and knowledge of Jesus Christ and hopefully the world not be able to deceive them as easily as would otherwise be the case. So that's something also that we need to see if we can address. Talk with you about one third kind of member that so often we tend to lose sometimes. How about those members among us who sadly are influenced in a negative way by the poor example of other members? Can that happen from time to time? Jesus said that it could. In Matthew chapter 18 and verse 7, Jesus said, "Beware of stumbling blocks. It's inevitable," he said, "that stumbling blocks will come, but beware." And woe to that man, Jesus said, by whom that stumbling block comes. Paul talked about this in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, Romans 14, where sometimes Christians, maybe it's a scenario as Paul discusses in 1 Corinthians and Romans, where, okay, maybe you view yourself as having the liberty to do something, but yet the example that gives to somebody else, maybe somebody else who's much more prone to falling away than you are, maybe that becomes a negative example. And in effect, though you never intended it, you became a stumbling block to somebody else. Maybe they look at you and your example, and because you're doing something, or maybe because you're not doing something, then they feel much more at ease to maybe do that which would be borderline, or maybe not feel as much of a necessity to engage in certain spiritual activities that really would be good for that person. And maybe sometimes it's our example because we're not as dedicated as we should be. You know, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33, he said, "You seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness." That needs to be our priority, every one of us. Guess what's so hard to really get new converts to really appreciate? What it means to seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness on a real practical level. They don't tend to get that. They don't really understand what all that means. And I tell you, sometimes our example maybe isn't as good, especially for those people who are much more prone to be pulled back into the world maybe than you or I are. But it's our example that becomes a negative thing for them. I'll give an illustration of what I mean. Here's somebody who observes that, well, okay, a whole bunch of people don't come back on Sunday night. So guess what? They don't feel as much of a compulsion to come on Sunday night. And I realize I'm speaking here to the Sunday night group. But my point is, sometimes even the people who come on Sunday nights or other times, sometimes, you know, maybe we're not as dedicated about our attendance as we could be, as we should be. Or sometimes the people who choose to go on vacation when we have a gospel meeting. Okay, what example does that give to other people? And those other people, then they don't see gospel meetings as that important. It's not that big of a deal. Because the people who are supposedly the strong ones, they don't have a problem with going on vacation or missing Sunday morning service to go do something that's of a recreation nature. That's not a problem. And maybe for you, maybe that's not something that would ever tempt you to then quit living as a Christian. But somebody else who's a weaker Christian, who needs to be at every single service just so they'll survive the world, maybe your example on that occasion just sort of encourages them not to attend. Don't get me wrong, I think you should be here too for yourself. But I'm just saying that maybe that is an example that unwittingly, and I know you're not thinking about it like that, but maybe that's our problem, is that we don't think about these things sometimes, and we just think that, well, this just affects me. And yet we have a lot of people who then don't come and don't feel the need to come and don't participate in various things. And so often, it's the people who are the weakest who need that kind of encouragement at that worship service. They need to hear those lessons. They need all of that. And maybe our example has then not been the best for them. We need to give some attention to that. I'll tell you another area too. Maybe there are some things even in our life morally as a Christian. Maybe the judgments that we make, that other people who are Christians, they observe. And maybe we never think about it, but maybe the movies that we go see, that we don't have any problem seeing. Okay, maybe the fact that you're going to see that movie and you have no problem with that, maybe that encourages this younger Christian who really doesn't understand what seeking first God's kingdom and his righteousness means. Maybe he sees you going to that kind of movie or watching that kind of TV show or being involved in that kind of recreation, having that kind of beverage with your meal at the restaurant. Maybe he sees you doing that and therefore he just sort of assumes, well, then I guess
that kind of thing is not really a problem. And maybe you draw the line here, but what might happen? That other person who observes you in his spiritual immaturity, maybe he draws the line then here. And maybe then he draws it there. And your example is what kind of encouraged him. You never realized that, never thought about that. But yet that's the problem. You weren't thinking about that. Please don't think, and I know I'm stepping on some toes here. Believe me, I'm stepping on my own toes, because what I just said, this little example, I'm as guilty. There are things I think back in my past life and judgments I have made I'm ashamed of now because of the poor example it gave to other Christians. So I'm talking to myself here. But I know I'm stepping on some toes here, but I'm not speaking just hypothetically. I'm talking about specific cases among us that I know of, and I know certain people who have been negatively influenced by that because I've talked with them and they've told me about it. And so this is the kind of thing that we just have to realize. It's all part of being part of God's family. It's just like in your earthly family when you've got one sibling who's doing something, an older brother or whatever, and then the younger sibling is influenced by his behavior. It's exactly the same thing in God's spiritual family. Exactly. Sometimes our example maybe isn't the best example, especially for those people who are younger and trying to grow and trying to really understand what commitment to Jesus and putting Him first is really all about. Paul said to the Corinthians, "Be careful lest this liberty of yours become the stumbling block for your brother." You better be careful about that. So these are some things that we need to think about. Could some of these losses among us, could they be prevented? I think they could be. And sadly, sometimes they weren't prevented, even though they were preventable. Let me read the words again of Hebrews 12, and the lesson will be yours. Strengthen the hands that are weak, and the knees that are feeble, and make straight paths for your feet, so that the limb which is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God. We're all part of this group, and that's our responsibility, to do our best, everything we can do, to see to it that no one comes short. If you're here tonight and you need the gospel of Jesus Christ in some way, can we assist you with that? Can we help you to obey the Lord, whatever be your need? Once you come together, we stand and sing the song of encouragement.